Good evening again. In a few minutes, we'll be hearing the narration of the final hours of Jesus' life by John, the gospel writer. And there's kind of a hidden problem there, because we know where this story is going. We know how it ends. And so when Jesus is arrested after being betrayed and put on some kind of trial and then brought before Pontius Pilate, who will ultimately decide his fate, there's no tension in the story. It's not like you're watching a movie or reading a book for the first time and you don't know where this is going, you don't know what's going to happen. But imagine for a moment that you didn't. Up until this point, Jesus has taught, he has worked miracles, and he's gathered a following and invested himself in everybody around him. Then he's betrayed by one of his own. If this were a book or a movie, you'd be on the edge of your seat. What's going to happen to him? And underneath all of that, one of the things that you'd be probably asking as this man that you would know to be innocent because you've been reading the book, well, is what's going to happen to him just? Is it going to be fair? Is there still justice in the world? And ultimately, does he have any hope for getting out of this alive? The machinations happening behind the scenes center around Caiaphas and Annas. Annas is the father-in-law of Caiaphas, and he had successfully controlled the office of the high priest for a good decade by this point. He was an awful person, generally speaking. I know that's judgmental, but a few people earn it, and he did. Which meant that he was also really very much intertwined or enmeshed with those in power, the Roman Empire. He was friends with the occupation force. You don't do that. It's a betrayal. And they recognize that if Jesus really is who he says he is, or even if enough people believe that he is who he says he is, then their power, and more importantly, as the leaders of the temple, their income source, as they rip off the Judeans, will vanish. And so, of course, he has to die. So, what I want to focus on for just a few minutes, and then we'll hear it read, is when Jesus encounters Pontius Pilate. He's the governor of that region. He spends most of his time in Caesarea Philippi, which, by all accounts, at least back then, was a really, really nice coastal town. I honestly don't know how it is today. And he would have to come during Passover down to Jerusalem, and he would stay with a whole bunch of troops in Fortress Antonia, which overlooks the temple complex, because if the Judeans or the Jewish people were ever to get funny ideas about independence, it was going to be during Passover when they celebrate that God rescued their ancestors from slavery. So, imagine from Pilate's perspective. It's at night. Caiaphas, who I'm just going to guess, they tell you not to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. I have a really strong suspicion that he was hard to work with. Kind of overly dramatic and very insistent and used to getting his way. Kind of a nightmare combination. And so you can imagine Pilate just going, "Oh, you've got to be joking," as it's night and Caiaphas and his cronies show up with just some Galilean peasant. And they're saying, effectively, this man is threatening the safety, security, and interests of the Roman Empire. Now, Pilate does not care about justice. He does not care about fairness. He cares only about keeping everything relatively quiet in that region. Because the Roman Empire needed that region to be relatively quiet because that's how they got grain shipments from the Nile River Delta up to the rest of the empire. The problem was the Judeans, or the Jewish people, hated the occupation force, and so there was a riot and a battle every now and again. It was his job to keep that down. The problem is that Pilate also had a tendency to constantly trip over himself. He had no real, or at least poor sense of Jewish sensibility. So he was constantly offending them. And he only lasted maybe 6 or 7 years in office before he was removed by Caesar. And he was removed by Caesar because he put down a Samaritan uprising so brutally that even the Roman emperor had to say, okay, that's a little much. That's pretty bad. So, Pilate now has to deal with this guy from Galilee. And so he starts asking him, hey, they're saying you're making claims to be a king. Now, if Jesus were legitimately saying, hey, I'm the rightful king of the Jews, I belong on the throne of David in exactly the way you expect, and therefore all Gentile invaders need to be removed, then yeah, that's a legitimate reason to crucify, at least from a Roman perspective, because that essentially means war. But Jesus responds in a way that I really doubt Pilate expected. He said, my kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would be fighting to prevent me from being handed over. Jesus isn't denying the accusation that he thinks he's a king. He's just saying this kingdom works differently. And you can tell that it's working differently because there isn't currently a riot in the temple complex because they know I've been arrested. Now, Pilate kind of teases that out a little bit. He's like, all right, so you are a king? All right, so just so we're kind of, you know, we got this figured out. And then at some point in that conversation, Pilate realizes that, oh, okay, this is just a religious fanatic who has no interest in starting a fight. In other words, all right, I'm done. This is a waste of my time. We're out. And so he goes back to Caiaphas and says, yeah, this guy's not guilty. Please stop wasting my time. I added that last part, but I can just see it. And Caiaphas insists, constantly pushing back. And Pilate's like, just take him and judge him by your own law. And Caiaphas says, no, he has to be put to death. And we're not legally allowed to do that. And you can just imagine, in modern terms, it would be like the Pilate saying, there's so much paperwork. Can you just deal with it on your own? Which I very much appreciate. And as they go back and forth, assuming that we don't know where this is headed, there's still hope. There are a couple of avenues, I think, that Jesus could have approached or taken to get Pilate off his back and maybe even on his side. At this point, Pilate is at best neutral. What Jesus would need to do is convince Pilate that it would be worse for him, for Pilate, if he did something about Jesus versus just letting him go. That's a bit of a hard sell, but I think at that point there's still hope. He could pull that off. the talk about kings, one of the things that Jesus could have said was that, I consider myself a king in the Jewish tradition, but I only have one king, and that's Caesar. I serve the empire. Now, in order for Jesus to do that, or by virtue of saying that, he would essentially be denying the entire message of the Hebrew Bible and the core of the history of his people, which is God is king, period, end of discussion. For obvious reasons, Jesus can't say that. But again, if we're watching this as a movie or reading this as like a novel, there would be a multi-layered irony going where if we're rooting for Jesus, we're thinking, man, just say Hail Caesar or something like that. But of course he can't. And he won't. Because it's not true. Now, eventually, Caiaphas ups the ante and says, hey, we have a law. He says he's the Son of God. And if you say something like that, then you have to die. And for some reason, and I'm still not clear on this, that changes the conversation for Pilate. And he starts freaking out. He goes back in and says, where are you from? Something has him spooked. Now, we know from Matthew that Pilate's wife had a dream about Jesus, and she actually warns Jesus, do not get involved with this guy. There's something going on. And shockingly, he doesn't listen to his wife. You can make your own punchline. But nonetheless, something about that has Pilate a little uneasy, more uneasy than he had been. And I don't know if it's that Jesus just gives off this vibe or something like that. He has this way about him that is otherworldly or very intensely this worldly. I don't know. It's probably all of that. And at that point, if Pilate's saying, where are you from? Jesus still has hope. He could say, I'm from Galilee, Nazareth. You know, that backwoods part of the country that nobody cares about. Yeah, I'm from there. Tiny little town. Nice fish. You should check it out sometime. Look, I'm not a threat. But instead, Jesus is just silent. I don't know if you've ever had this experience in maybe like an elevated discussion or conflict within a group of people or just between two people or something of that nature. It doesn't have to even be negative, but it is very aggressive in that situation to be the one who's just silent. That is not passive. That is very aggressive, and it can be very scary if someone does that well. Well, Jesus, he's quiet. That takes a lot of nerve. And then Pilate says, of course, he feels the need to flex. I think he's feeling insecure because he's the authority of Rome right here in Judea, and this guy has the gall not to answer him. He says, don't you know that I can get you executed? I can crucify you. And to translate for context, he's saying, I can have you beaten, stripped naked, and tortured in front of absolutely everybody you know. And my guys know how to make it last a very long time. That's effectively the threat. Jesus seems unfazed. He says, the only reason why you have that authority is that it was given to you from above. The one who handed me over has the greater responsibility, the greater sin, the greater culpability. That's Caiaphas, of course. That's not the answer you give if you want to live. And I think it's roughly around that point where hope starts to fade, for Jesus anyway. Now, Pilate insists that he's innocent. And at some point in that discussion, he starts to realize this just isn't worth it. And here we see a little bit of the coldness of his own persona. To trade a life for something that is convenient. That's heartless. It also saved him a lot of time. Saved him a lot of frustration. Clearly, Caiaphas is not willing to be reasoned with, and he, generally speaking, was not a reasonable person anyway. And so, as Jesus continues to either not answer or answer in the most bizarre ways, hope fades for him. And again, if we were reading this for the first time and we didn't know what was going to happen, the tension would start to build real quick. I mean, we're used to rooting for the hero. The good guy gets away. He lives. The bad guy goes wherever bad guys go in most of our stories. But the longer Jesus talks to Pilate, the more you start to realize this is not going the way it's supposed to. And that raises all kinds of other questions. At the outset, if you are rooting for somebody in a story, even in real life, and you want them to pull through in spite of the opposition, fundamentally what you are asking is there still justice in this world? Is life even remotely fair? And the longer Jesus interacts with Pilate, the clearer the answer gets. No. There's no justice. Life is not fair. And it's about to all come crashing down on the one innocent guy in this story. In order to seal the deal, however, Caiaphas has to pull out one of the most manipulative tactics you can use. Because as Pilate is going back and forth with Caiaphas right towards the end of his time with Jesus, Caiaphas says, look, he's claiming to be king. If you let this guy go, you're not a friend of Caesar. And for what it's worth, if Pilate is known to be not a friend of Caesar, unemployment is the least of his concerns. Because Caesar's not known for being a generous, forgiving person. So he's saying, look, you're not a friend of Caesar if you let that peasant go. And Pilate, recognizing what's happening, says, what about you? And Caiaphas commits then in that moment the catalyzing sin for which Jesus quite literally dies. He says, we have no king but Caesar. Not only that, but this is spoken as a group. He's gotten a whole bunch of people in on it. But in order for them to say that, they have to commit the grave sin of denying the entire history of their people, what it means to be Jewish, their sacred texts written over many hundreds of years, to say that they have a king other than God. In this story, it's the liars, the manipulators, the violent, the unjust who win. Once those words come out of their mouths, we have no king but Caesar, there's no more hope. It's over. Pilate has been won over to the cause, so to speak. In contrast to that kingdom of the lies, manipulation, and injustice, is the kingdom that Jesus really is the king of, and the kingdom that he has inaugurated and started throughout his career, one that is rooted in justice, in equity, in hope, where the blind see, the lame walk, the dead are raised, the naked are clothed, the hungry are fed, the poor are brought good news, where everybody has a place at the table, including the wrong people, those on the outside or the outcasts of society. You can see the tension then shifting between those two kingdoms. And then in the story that we will hear narrated in just a few minutes, the wrong kingdom wins. Hope is snuffed out. Those who act with just cold, indifferent injustice win. And this moment speaks to the darkness in all of us. How many of us yearn for justice, but then fail to see how we take part in that injustice? We want equity and equality, and we want everybody to have what they need, and we want mercy and grace and forgiveness for us. But then when that has to apply to the wrong sorts of people as determined by us, we'd rather not. Well, in the moment, as the weight of all of that darkness from the human heart comes crashing down on Jesus, there's no justice in the world, and there's no reason to hope. And so we wait to see how that story will change.